Welcome to the Live Limitless podcast, everyone. I'm your host, Gigi Meyer, and we're going to be having a lot of conversations with experts in fitness, nutrition, lifestyle, in general health, but also in things like relationships, family, faith, business, sports, you name it. And we really just want this to be a space where you can learn how to break through all the things holding you back from living to your true potential one by one. It's time to live limitless. Let's dive in. Hey, Dad, welcome back.
G-Fit.
So we actually did a little bit of rebranding. Did you know that? I have a new name for my podcast.
No, what is it?
It's called Live Limitless Podcast, not the Gigi Meyer Podcast anymore.
Beautiful. Live Limitless.
Yes. And that was just a change that we did recently. And we changed it just because G-Fit's growing really fast. And I don't know, I figured it was a good way to brand, but you're the first guest on the Live Limitless Podcast.
Well, I hope it's not my last.
No, we should do this like every week. But yay, I'm excited you're back. And some cool things coming up, right? We're having our date night tonight, right?
Yeah, all my friends, I recommend that they have daughters that, you know, in this world, you get a chance to take your daughter and spend one-on-one time with them. And that was every Wednesday, as long as I can remember when you and Nikki were little. And one of the best things I ever did is, you know, you guys used to get dressed up and I'd pick you up and we'd go to a nice restaurant. And I can't wait for tonight.
I know. Every Wednesday night, where'd we go?
What's that?
Where did we go every Wednesday night in Gainesville?
Oh, that sushi place.
Dragonfly.
Dragonfly. Yeah, that was it. Every Wednesday.
To this day, it's still our family favorite sushi restaurant. Oh, that's awesome. I don't know. What are some other fun stories of me growing up?
Oh, you were awesome. You were the Tom girl back when, you know, it was really cool. And you used to didn't play girl sports for a long time. And you just loved, you'd sit around the house, wait for me to get home at late. You'd have your baseball cap on and a glove. We'd go out and play catch. And then we moved to Utah. And the best story that I share so many times with people still is when I'm at work and your mom texts me and said, Gigi's playing at 4 o'clock or whatever it is. And I hustle over there and I bring a coach and a player with me, your buddy, Marty.
Oh, yeah.
And we brought him over and started watching and you're playing in this boys' Catholic league. And sure enough, to make a long story short, it's back and forth, back and forth. You guys are playing. They were much better than you guys, but you were playing so hard and you had a great game. And there's they score and down by two, you're the point guard. You dribble up the court and you launch a shot. As time runs out, they hit your arm and you have two shots and they pull everybody off the court. And I've coached in big games and I've never been more nervous in my life. And I'm pacing back and forth. Your mom's praying. You know, the coach, Chuck Heater, was there and he's like, I can't believe I'm watching this. And you walk up to the free throw line. You're a little girl at the time.
Like eight.
Yeah, like eight. You can barely get it, you know, to the, you know, from the free throw line to the bucket. And obviously I'm telling the story because you made both shots. And I know we're down by one.
Yeah.
So you make the first shot, tie it, and it kind of bounces around and then goes in. And then the second one, and I'm on a knee now watching, and you swish it. And when Rocky Balboa beat the Russian, and the great Rocky IV movie, when they ran in the ring, it was like your mom sprinting on the court and he picks you up and I'm teared up and just pacing back and forth, watching this all unfold. We go back home that night and I'm in bed with Shell and we're trying to go to sleep and I can't sleep. Your mom's sleeping. I keep waking her up and I said, can you believe what Gigi did? I go, Shaquille O'Neal can't even do that. So there's many great stories, striking out boys. And when I would challenge you and I say, you know, that little boy over there, and I pointed to whatever kid over there, and he really didn't say anything, but he said, I'm not going to get struck out by a little girl. And you used to get so angry, but it worked.
It worked. I did all right.
You did all right. You're awesome.
I do remember that actually happening when I made those free throws. I was the only one at the line. Everyone was watching me.
Yeah, the whole, you know, and it was a good crowd because it was a playoffs or whatever, and you made the shots.
8 years old. Yeah, that was fun. Good stuff. Fun. So that's your favorite story of me, the basketball one?
Yeah, there's so many, you know, the wakeboarding stories. When I seen you, I sit on the back of the boat and watch you tip your hat to the crowd. And
I salute Mommy to the River, crowd.
You saluted the crowd. And there's so many great stories.
Yeah. Huge. Oh, we'll have to share some more later. But yeah, so one of the most recent podcasts that I released, right, was a little bit more on like the vulnerable, authentic side. It took a lot out of me to kind of talk about and share some things that I hadn't really talked about in ever. And obviously you listened to it. So I kind of just wanted to hear the first thing that you told me was, this is the best I've ever heard. Like, this is one of the best I've ever heard. And I was actually kind of shocked. I wasn't actually expecting you to ever hear it. And I don't know how you would respond if you heard it, but I just wanted to hear your thoughts on when you were hearing it.
Oh, it was incredible. It was about the anxiety, you know, and depression. And when people care so deeply about something, you know, it's something that I went through myself that I never, for the most of my life, I never experienced anything like it until I got to Florida in my first year. In the middle of my first year, I started not sleeping. I started feeling like the weight of the world was on my shoulders because of Gator Nation, because of Steve Spurrier, because of all the expectations. You got to raise your family. And I just felt that I didn't have control anymore. And that was that. And I remember calling your mom, because your mom's a psychiatric nurse and deals with us all the time. And we used to talk, and I never really believed in it. You know, I said, toughen up, you'll be all right. And then I felt it myself that, I mean, without sleeping pills, I couldn't sleep. I never missed a night of sleep in my life. It was about, I'd say probably September, October in 2005. And I remember asking mom, say, what is this going on? And she goes, you're going through some anxiety issues and all that. And she really helped me through it. And then obviously I had some, you know, major ones hit me later on in my tenure at Florida. I've had it happen really my entire career since that time. And, you know, and mom really helped. I had mechanisms, you know, whether it be, you know, devotionals in the morning, reading the Bible, spending every second of the day with Shelly or the kids. And then the one thing that really helped me too is the audience of one. You know, when I finally figured out that I'm not here to please others. I'm here to please our creator. And that's it. And that's so easy to say. It's so hard to do. And I thought your podcast, because I've done that. I wrote an article. I didn't write an article, but we did an article called The Lone Wolf. And I had more people, coaches, big time coaches, I'm not going to say names, that reached out to me. I had friends. I had people, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people reached out to me and saying, thanks for doing that. It really helped them. And I know your podcast can do the same.
What was the overall idea of the Lone Wolf article?
Yeah, what you're dealing with. And I said, it's not it. You know, people look at whether it be depression, whether it be anxiety, whether it be just, you know, you lose sleep because you're just constantly consumed by something. I said, that's a gift. Every great, great, great player I've ever dealt with has dealt with something like that. Every great coach I've ever dealt with has dealt with something. And so I, you know, it's not a stigma. There's not something wrong. It's actually a gift. That's why you're so good at what you do. That's why GFIT is prospering, because that's why you're so good with people. That's why you're so good in your faith. And that may be partly why I was decent at coaching, is because, I mean, I cared. You know how I cared. Mm-hmm. I cared about every player like they were our kid. I cared about the team and making sure it was a positive experience. So it's almost like I admire people who don't care that much. I really don't, but I just look at them. I go, man, this really doesn't bother you, does it? And they look at me and go, no, it doesn't bother me at all. I'm thinking, I'm just sitting here, guy, I have a hard time breathing, and I'm watching these people. So when I listened to yours, I was like, wow, because I knew a little bit about it, Cheech, but I didn't know the depth.
Do you think that some people would argue that when you say like that obsession that like sometimes results in anxiety and depression, do you? Some people might argue that it's too much, that it's unhealthy to an extent.
Sure, I think, but it's also scientific that a certain amount of stress is very healthy. You know, no stress is not healthy. You're just, you know, lay around on a couch all day.
Yeah, you're just existing.
You're existing. You're not making a difference. You're not using the skills that God gave you. And then obviously, you know, it's like virtues and vices. This is one of the coolest things. Me and you talked about this, I think. A virtue is something positive that you do, or a trait that you have. A vice is something that's negative. And virtue in excess becomes a vice. If I'm courageous, that's a virtue. If I'm reckless, it becomes a vice. Anything in excess, I'm tough. Okay, great. That's a virtue. It becomes, I'm reckless and I get in fights all the time. That's a vice. I'm religious. That's a virtue. I become an extremist because of my religion, which we witness terrorism and all that, that becomes obviously a horrific vice. And anything in excess, you have to be very cautious. But it's also the way God created you. It's Gigi, you are who you are.
I was raised by you.
Yeah. I've seen your whole life. I mean, you you got great grades, not because you were the smartest person in the room. You just worked harder than everybody else. I'm the same way. You know, you're doing what you do. And and then there's others that just kind of, I'm going to get up at 10 and, you know, but you have to be aware of burnout. You have to be aware of being overcome. And you just have, you know, the greatest word I've heard is you have to have mechanisms in your life to help you through that.
Mm-hmm. So for someone like me, who's I'm almost 29 years old in a couple of months, and someone like me, who's just getting started. And we talked about this last time we had that conversation, and this is going to transition to kind of what I want to talk about, is victim versus victor mindset. Was that conversation you and I had when I was like sitting down in the middle of the day watching SpongeBob or something, like just sitting, doing nothing. And, I think that conversation changed the trajectory of my life and has made me become who I am now, and where I'm at now. But for someone like me and from someone like you, who has been doing this for a long time, what kind of advice would you give for someone to find this balance, or if it's not even balance, if balance is like a myth of this balance between like chasing your dreams and being healthy. You know what I mean?
Sure. Well, victim versus victor, I think is a really cool, I've never heard it exactly said like that, but I used to be, and I've changed, my heart was been softened. And years ago, I believed, you know, anybody that claimed to be a victim, they're lying. That's not true. And then I went on a 37 year run in a laboratory and coached every race, every background, every person from every different parts of the country, every religion. And reality is there are some victims out there. Mm. You know, this is a tough world. Mm-hmm. And some people, unfortunately, are caught in really awful circumstances growing up. But I believe you can fight out of it. Matter of fact, I know you can fight out of it because I've witnessed it. This is not theory. You know, there's a theory and testimony. Theory is maybe this could happen and maybe should happen, where theory versus testimony. Testimony is I've witnessed it. I've gone through it. You've gone through it. You've seen it happen. And testimony is I really believe from what I witnessed in my journey that if you put your nose to it, grind to it, and you put your heart to it, you can accomplish. You tell me one thing you can't do, and I would disagree with you. Now, there's certain people that, you know, well, I'm going to go run a 5-minute mile, or you can't do that, or I'm going to, you know, but if you have a dream and goal that fits your skill set, and even if your skill set needs to improve, and I'm talking about your mental and physical skill set, you tell me what you can't do. And that's why I love this country so much. I really, because I've seen people do it. I've seen people from really horrific situations, you know, make it because they decide to work harder than someone else.
Mm. Anyone specific you have in mind?
Oh yeah. I mean, there's many guys, you know, I could say, Dallas Baker was one of my all time favorites. He was a guy that came from a real difficult situation growing up, really struggled in school. You know, people said he wasn't very intelligent and he had, you know, behavior issues and on and on and on. And finally he's like a son of ours, you know, he's like a family member now, but we had some hard conversations. We held him accountable. And all of a sudden now he's a wide receiver coach at Baylor University. You know, this is after playing in the NFL and being a leader on the national championship team in 06. And here's the same guy that was told he can't do become that. And there's many, many stories.
Mm, yeah. Tons of them. One of the quotes that stuck with me that just comes to mind whenever I think about this is, and you might have to help me, but genetics shape you, right? Circumstances influence you, but your decisions are what define you.
That's it. And genetics, you have no control over. You didn't have a pick of your mom and dad. You didn't have a pick of tall, short, fast, slow, whatever. It wasn't your choice, you know. So that's the way it is. Obviously, our creator picked that. And then circumstances, you know, you really don't have much control over that as well. You're kind of, you know, some people are born into some very difficult circumstances. You know, you see horrific stories of the way certain people have been treated, the conditions they're raised in, the lack of education and opportunity. And so you can't always dictate your circumstances, but you got to fight through them. But every, you know, your decisions will ultimately define you. And what I always tell people is that I've had people from incredible backgrounds, had every privilege or advantage possible, and they made bad decisions and they really struggled. I've had other people that come from the most horrific situations you can imagine. know, Chris Rainey comes to mind. He was, you know, crack. His mom was on crack and he was homeless for 4 years. And he kept fighting, ended up graduating from Florida and becoming a great player for us. It wasn't easy. He had some adversity along the way, but we never turned our back on him. And here he is today, playing in the CFL. So I love the way we say that.
Yeah, I think that's perfectly put. And I think it plays into this whole idea, like what I wanted to talk about, the victim versus victor mindset. And you said you haven't heard of it like put that way before. But to me, it's just a mindset, right? So it goes along with what we were just talking about. Like you are not in control in certain things in your life, but you are ultimately in control of how you handle it, how you think about it, how you respond to it. And that ultimately like impacts the way the outcome happens, the way things happen in your life. And I think another quote that I heard you say was, and this is another topic that goes along with it, is E plus R equals O, right? Your events plus your response dictates your outcome. It equals your outcome. And although the events in your life you can't control, you can control your response. And that dictates the outcome ultimately. And you said the way you live your life, whether, you know, the decisions that you make, whether they're, above the line, they're skillful, they're intentional, or they're below the line, they're impulsive, or they're on autopilot, dictates like the quality of your life. Ultimately, do you remember saying that your decisions is what it ultimately dictates, like the quality of your life?
Sure. And there's great examples. This is a great visual for everyone because it happens. This is real life. Once again, this is not theory. This happened. I had a great player whose girlfriend cheated on him in college, and he called his coach, and we just were putting him through E plus R equals O training. That means how you respond. And we actually had, to this day, I have the bracelet on to remind me in certain situations, you can't control the events in your life. He can control that. She did. And he was drinking and he was going to go get in a fight with a guy, probably get in a fight with her too. And would have went to jail probably and ruined his career. Very good player. Instead, he looked at his wristband. He saw E plus R equals O and he called his coach 2 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. And his coach talked to him for over an hour, calmed him down. Talked to him about E plus R equals O. He went to sleep, woke up in the morning, broke up with a girl. That was that. And he became a first round draft choice in the National Football League and a national champion at Ohio State. So that was a perfect example. You know, there's other examples where these are the easy ones. You're out there drink, get a couple cocktails and you go walk to your car instead of calling an Uber or you get in your car and you drive home. And that can change your life in a minute. It happens to those are real life scenarios. So you can't necessarily control the events in your life, but you can control how you respond. And there's a lot of different ways, but these stuck with me. Number one is to press pause. Why? You're in a situation, bang, it happens. Press pause. Why do you do that? To gain clarity. You know, where am I? What's going on? How will this impact me? A second thing, get your mind right. You know, what response is necessary in this situation to do the right thing? And then finally, step up and do the right thing. And once again, very easy to say, not always easy to do.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of things that it can be complicated to like make the right decisions sometimes, like, and just being put in situations like that where it's like, it's so complicated. I don't know what to do, whatever. Like, I love the sound bites and the simplicity of like E plus R equals O.
Yeah, impulse. Always remember impulse. If you really think about impulse, the way we're created, you're sinners, you make mistakes. Mm-hmm. If your impulse usually changes people's lives and not in a good way, not always, there's always some great impulse, but once again, we're broken beings, above the line behavior or the right decisions are most of the time intentional. That means with purpose. That means taught. Impulsive is she cheated on me. I'm going to go beat up the guy. That's impulse. Mm-hmm. Intentional is, wait a minute, if I do that, I'm going to go to jail. My career is over. People are going to get hurt. And that's not the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. So I love the sound bites as well.
Mm-hmm. The sound bites and just the idea of being intentional allows you to like work backwards. Like you identify the outcome that you want. And then you're like, okay, what does it take to get there? Because impulse doesn't take into account the outcome at all.
I bet everybody right now is listening to this. Just write down 10 people that have made impulsive decisions. Very easy to, and it's, we all have, I have, you have. Mm-hmm. And, but you also can write down ones that have changed their life, mm-hmm. impulsive decisions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Awesome. And so speaking of like sound bites, that's kind of what like victim versus victor is to me. It's like, there's, situations every single day. And I think it's more about the awareness factor of like, am I playing the victim here? Is there something I absolutely cannot do about it? Like I'm a victim of this, or can I be a victor of this? Like, is there something that I can do about it? And there's almost 100% of the time, something that I can do about it that I could have learned from it or done better to prepare for it or something. And something that I learned from John Madsen was playing the 100% responsibility game, like taking full ownership in things, even though in the least bit feels like it was your fault or something that was a result of you, you know, of your wrongdoing. But yeah, that's kind of what the victim versus victor mindset is. And I think essentially at the end of the day, like if you are constantly in this victim mindset, like you're just going to stay right where you're at because the blame is elsewhere. It's not in your hands to do anything about it. And that awareness isn't there to be able to do anything about it. Whereas a victor is like taking that 100% responsibility and being like, okay, what could I have done to learn from this? Like, is there something I could have done better? And, you know, what's a different outcome or what could I have done better essentially? So I have 5 things written down that you can identify the difference between a victim and a victor. And we're going to go through those one by one. Is that cool?
Sure.
So I said a victim looks outward, right? And a victor looks inward. So kind of along the lines of like taking 100% responsibility, something happens in your life and you're like, oh, well that sucks. Like that wasn't supposed to happen to me. Or why did that happen to me? There's nothing I can do about that. Instead of a victor looks inward and says like, what could I have done better to prepare for this?
Yeah. I think something that Tim Kite and I, we've had many conversations about this. Whenever you supply energy to anything, it gives it life. You know, if I'm going to give life to something, and there might be some truth to it, that you were not treated correctly. Mm-hmm. Media didn't treat you correctly. You have someone that worked for you. They didn't treat you correctly. There's probably some truth to that. Mm-hmm. However, what energy you're given to that, what will that solve? As opposed to look inward and say, okay, that's a reality. There was some victimization there. Mm-hmm. You were a victim of something. Mm-hmm. Move on. You know, it's whatever you provide energy to gives life to it. And if you're going to give life to your heart, to your own soul, and to your self-evaluation, that's all positive and how to move forward. If you're going to give energy to how can I blame this person or how can I, you know, justify what happened. And we've all been there. I mean, this is all, we're certainly not preaching. Mm-hmm. This is reality. But I love this saying, why am I giving energy to that? All it's doing is giving it life. And most of the time that's not good.
Mm. That's great. I mean, tying that into energy, like where's your energy going? Is it going places that's just going to hurt you more or places that it's actually going to help you?
And you are what your energy is directing you to be. If you're a person that always is blaming others, you know, I got a feeling you're really struggling in life right now.
Mm.
And like I said, we're not saying that's not true. There's reality to that. Mm-hmm. You know, you're in a really tough situation. You had nothing to do with, okay. Mm-hmm. It happened. Now you got to focus on how to get out of that situation, not what gets you into that situation.
Mm. Good. So that leads me into, a victim makes excuses and a victor makes plans. So a victim, you know, has a dream or a goal or whatever of some sort and has aspirations, but the excuse is it's too expensive. I don't have enough time. I don't have enough energy. Like I'm too busy. Whereas a victor makes plans like, okay, what adjustments can I make like to prioritize this? If this is exactly what I want. So a victim makes excuses, a victor makes plans.
Love that. And the reality is that once again, going back, is the reality that sometimes it is too expensive. Mm-hmm. I don't have time. Those are all true.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Maybe you have to cut in other areas. That's keeping you from being that victor. And I love the way you say that, but I think everybody, you know, you'll turn this off if you'll say, why are they preaching at me? This is not, that's real. I don't right. have time. It's too expensive. I can't go to law school. Mm-hmm. It's too expensive. Okay. Maybe you have to go work evenings. You know, I wanted to be a grad student at Ohio State, but I didn't have enough money to pay for my room and board. Mm-hmm. And I could have said, I just can't make it, which is probably, that's real. I didn't have no money to do that. So what did I do? I bought steel tip shoes and I went and worked at Consolidated Freightways 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. the month of May, so I can continue becoming a grad student and becoming a coach at Ohio State, where a lot of people say, I just can't do this anymore because they ran out of money. And reality is I ran out of money too. Zero. I was down to zero.
Mm-hmm.
And I searched, someone helped me get this job and I made it. Mm-hmm. And I look back now, and if I would have just tapped the brakes and said, I'm done, then we would have a
much different
life.
Hold up. I want to revisit that. So you did what from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m.
Yeah,
to 7 a.m.?
They paid for our school, but they didn't give us much money to live on. And so I was poor and I was not going to ask my family for money. I just couldn't do that. You know, we didn't have any money really. And so there's this place, the Consolidated Freightways. It's a truck stop. It's a loading dock. Mm-hmm. And so they offered me a job as 18, and this is a long time ago, 1986. $18 an hour, which was a lot of money. And I would go and I'd pack like this awful lunch I ate at 3 a.m. So I'd get in at 7 o'clock at night. You get a break 5 hours into it or 6 hours in, whatever it was. And I'd put microwave your food. You're sitting or eat the food. You're so tired. You're smelling all the fumes from the forklift. I drove a forklift and I got in at 7 a.m. I showered and went into work, didn't sleep.
For the whole month of May?
The whole month, the week, like every Friday and Saturday. Saturday, I sleep, but Friday I had to work. Saturday I had to be in the office. That's how I survived. And your mom witnessed it. You know, she saw, and there's no choice. What are you going to do? I also took out a loan
mm-hmm.
that we had to pay, $10,000 loan at the time was a lot of money. I had to pay that thing back. Mm-hmm. So, but that just taught us the value of money, Shelly and I, and that taught us the value of hard work. And once again, there is choices.
Mm-hmm.
I could have quit. And then what's amazing, here's the final part of the story. The CEO or the boss of the Consolidated Freightways actually offered me a job because I became like a foreman and they wanted me to.
Like a full-time job?
Yeah. And they said, and I had no money. I was sick of this, and he said, I was like $40,000, $35,000 a year and you get a car. And I went home and I told Shelly, I said, these guys want me to do this full time, be a foreman on the floor. And I was like, I might do this. And she goes, what? Give up your dream of being a coach? I said, Shelly, I don't have any money. I'm tired of being poor. I'm tired of, we can't go on weekends. We can't eat. We can't. And she talked me, several times she talked me out of giving
up. Wasn't there another story? You want to be a law student?
Yeah, in Illinois State, I actually sent away for the LSAT and I was going to stop for 6 months, study for law school. And become a lawyer because I was making $6,000 a year at Illinois State. I hated it. And she just kept saying,
wait, how much were you making?
$6,000 a year. And sleeping on the, I slept on the office couch and kept the clothes in my car because I was homeless basically for, it's about 6 months. And then someone let me sleep on their couch.
Oh my gosh.
But that was not, I guess my generation, that's the way you did it. You just fought and scratched and clawed. And once again, was I a victim? And I was really struggling finding a good job. Yeah. And I could have certainly took the easy way out, but Shelly was really helpful. And I just wanted it so bad to become a coach.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's amazing.
You never knew that?
I didn't know the forklift thing. I didn't know that. I know you've been a bouncer or two before.
Yep. Had to survive.
Was that while you were a GA too?
No, that was in college.
Oh.
I was just to pay my rent too.
What other fun, what do you call it, jobs have you had?
I was a bouncer. It was the first job I ever had. And
didn't you work for David Copperfield or something?
No. Yeah, I worked behind the stage. So they gave us a $100 bill and you work at get there at 7 a.m. and you get done at 7 p.m. and you could stay for the concert and lift. They give you a $100 bill and you could, and I was backstage at Timberwolf at Kings Island and Cool in the Gang, Pointer Sisters and the Cars and Go-Go's and Beach Boys and then David Copperfield and also Jimmy Buffett.
So you ran into Jimmy Buffett.
Yeah. So that's how I first met Jimmy Buffett in 1984, something like that.
And you went up and introduced yourself.
No, I was backstage and he was, I just Everybody just kind of shook hands.
Were you obsessed with him at the time?
No, I didn't know who he was.
Oh.
I was going to go home, and they said, because I sound really like country music. I said, you might want to stay. And that's from that point forward. I've been
you loved him? Jimmy Buffett guy. Now you guys are like buds. Do you guys like text and stuff?
We did. Yeah, he's great.
Oh,
he's,
that's cool.
He's awesome.
He is awesome. All right. We digress a little bit, but let's move on. All right. So just a quick little recap, right? So victim versus victor. A victim, one, looks outward, and a victor looks inward, right? A victim makes excuses and a victor makes plans. The third thing I wrote down is a victim points fingers and a victor takes ownership. Victim, right? Blame, complain, defends.
And BCD.
BCD. And is pointing fingers saying, you shouldn't have done that. You shouldn't have done this, you know, and not taking ownership in the situation at all. And therefore, like, that eliminates all opportunity to like learn. You know what I mean?
Exactly. The thing I would add that's kind of a recap of what you just said, the best leaders I've been around, or victors, as you might say, is that they're self-evaluation mode constantly, where a victim is constantly evaluating the outside.
Mm.
You know, I'm looking at that person. Why does that person have what I don't? And he's focused, or he or she is focused on the, like you said, the outward, where the victor to me is don't worry about that person. It's not bad to, you know, study other people, but don't evaluate them constantly. Cause you're, once again, you're putting energy on what, how did that person get there? And I'm not, as opposed to self-evaluating. And what, you know, I changed this probably about 7 or 8 years ago, that in team goals, we can talk about this down the road, but it's almost like extraneous goals are the ones that, you know, national championship or goals that, you know, are on the outside, as opposed to inward pointed goals. For example, I want to maximize who I am.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm constantly evaluating the outside or chasing something on the outside, those are abstract, extraneous goals, outside goals, where the inward goals are, I want to maximize myself. So self-evaluation to me is a common denominator of very successful people. Mm-hmm. And as you would say, a victim is always evaluating and wondering, why does that person have this?
Mm-hmm.
Why am I not allowed? Why am I being held back?
Mm-hmm.
And your focus or all your energy is on the outside or that person, as opposed to self-evaluating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And along with the first 2 points that we made, looking outward versus looking inward, making excuses and as opposed to making plans, I feel like a victim who makes excuses, like the opportunity ends there. It's like, okay, well, I want this, but I can't have it because of this. Like, this is my excuse. And it ends there. And then, you know, the conversation's over. Whereas like someone who takes ownership and someone who takes 100% responsibility understands that there's a deeper level to it. Like, it doesn't end there. Like, there's actually something I can do about it.
You know, it's amazing, Gigi. And I've done this with my teams and when I've done it with my staff, and just in the summertime when I had time to myself, I would always draw circles about, okay, who are my elite? You know, who are my average and who are my defiant, disinterested? You know, and I'd say, okay, you have a team of 100 people. And it would almost always break down into that 10, 80, 10 that we used to say. You know, 10% elite, 80% just can go either way. And then the bottom 10% are, you either have to move on from, or they're just no value to you. Mm-hmm. And I think the same thing when you start saying, okay, who self-evaluates? Who takes ownership in things? It's amazing. It falls into the same exact categories.
Mm-hmm.
You have 10% of your organization are those elite people that are constantly in the self-evaluation mode, maximizing themselves as opposed to worrying about someone else.
Mm-hmm.
You have 80% that can go either way. It depends how they're led.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have 10% of society or people in your organization that's focused on something extraneous, something on the outside that they have no control over. Yet they're making excuses why they can't be in the same situation as them or the victim. The victor is the elite. The victim is the bottom 10%. And the 80% can go either way.
Mm-hmm.
And who's going to drive them? That goes in the leadership category.
Right.
That's your job as a coach. That's your job as a parent. That's your job as a CEO of a company.
Mm-hmm.
That's GFIT.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have, you get all your employees together, you're going to have 10, 80, 10.
Mm-hmm.
But the 80 is the most powerful. You know, that's if you can get the 80 to come over to your way, that's when you go win a national title. That's when you start selling, breaking records of sales or performance. Mm-hmm. But it's not focused on the bottom 10% because you can't really change them. Mm. It's just the way it is.
Wow. Yeah.
Strong.
Yeah.
But it's, once again, that's not theory. This is testimony. This mm-hmm. is a 35 year. I was in a laboratory for 38 years studying this, and you know how I am, the psychology part of it, the organizational behavior, I used to call it that. I've studied that my entire life. Mm-hmm. Is how do you get these elite organizations, which mm-hmm. like in Bowling Green, Utah, Florida, and mm-hmm. Ohio State were.
Yeah. Would you say that energy, you talk about energy a lot. Would you say that being a victim and the energy dedicated to being a victim, because you choose to be one, right? Like it's your decision to think that way and spend your energy in, like you were saying, outward and in places that you can't control. Do you think like the energy of being a victim is way more tolling than it is to like be a victor?
Oh, it's much easier.
It's much easier.
Oh, sure. Because there's no expectation and
right.
I'm going to be 58. It's never been easier to be a victim right now. Mm-hmm. People are going to listen.
Yeah.
They want to listen. They mm-hmm. want to hear the victim. They want to hear. Now it doesn't get you anywhere, but it's easy. I shouldn't say it's easy because that sounds harsh, but when I was growing up there, you weren't a victim. Mm-hmm. You got kicked in the tail. You started, the household I grew up in, the household you grew up in. I don't want to hear that.
Right.
It was that way in school too. Was on the part of the baseball, basketball, football teams I was part of that I just had really good coaches. Mm-hmm. They weren't interested in that. I mean, it'd be a tough day for you if you started playing the victim, mm-hmm. To everything. But once again, I'm not being heartless. Say there's not right. people that are part of bad situations.
Right.
You can call them. There's some victims out there that have to get some help to work through this, but that's the job of a coach mm-hmm. and a teacher. Help them get through this tough situation. Mm-hmm. Chris Rainey was a victim of an awful circumstance, mm-hmm. but it's your job. You can sit there and say, okay, and keep blaming others that he's in that situation, or you mm-hmm. can tighten your bootstraps and say, let's go. We got a lot of work to do. You got to work a little harder than the other person because you're right. coming from a tough situation. Mm-hmm. But I just feel like I just hear a lot more of the excuses than I do. And the excuses almost are acceptable. Mm-hmm.
Wow. Cool. This next one, I want to see your opinion. It's what I wrote down. I don't know if it's true, but I want to hear your thoughts, right? Victim makes decisions based on emotions, impulse, whereas a victor makes decisions based on logic and intention.
No doubt. I mean, that goes back to above the line, below the line.
Right.
And the fact that we are humans, mm-hmm. That's the asterisks by everything. We have to keep, capitalize it, underline it. We are human beings. That means if you just flow, you just let things go, you're an impulsive being that's going to make bad decisions. Mm-hmm. If you study the Bible, if you study history, if you study great leaders, if you study mentors that are great mentors, if you have great coaches, great teachers, great parents, mm-hmm. then a lot of things you're taught, it's called intentional is another word for being taught.
Yeah.
It's not normal. Mm-hmm. It's not, that doesn't just come to you. Your faith, your family, history, experiences, that's all part of being intentional. Mm-hmm. Impulses, I feel this way and I'm going to go with it. Mm-hmm.
So do you think intention and logic are different?
No, I think it's exactly the same.
Oh, exactly
I think
the same.
Logic's the same. I think wisdom's the same. I think history mm-hmm. is the same.
Right.
History doesn't lie. Mm-hmm. I think all those are intentional. Mm-hmm. Logic is intention.
Okay.
What is logic? Logic is mean you're using your mind, you're using history, right. You're using something that you've been taught along the way. Mm-hmm. It's called logic. Mm-hmm. It's the opposite of impulse.
Right. Okay. So when you and I were talking a little bit earlier, you were saying like a victor maybe sometimes doesn't make decisions based on logic, but just from their heart.
Yeah, I think there's also the human element of that logic tells you at times to play it conservative. Mm-hmm. I always told people when I was a young head coach, I didn't really know any better. I was 36 years old and I was letting it fly. Mm-hmm. I didn't have the logic or wisdom that of the experienced 55-year-old coach. Mm-hmm. I was much more conservative the older I got because I had much more to lose, mm-hmm. And logic told me that, you're at the top here. Don't screw it up. as opposed to when you're just starting out, you're not at the top, you know, swing as hard as you can and try it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'm Shelly would laugh too. And my friends or people who followed me were a part of my staff. They remember that nut that was a Bowling Green in Utah that, hey, let's try it. Dan Mullen and I used to talk about it. He was my offense coordinator he was with me at Bowling Green, Utah, and Florida.
Wow.
And I mean, you know, we were calling plays together and just game management. It was at times reckless, but it worked, you know, and we caught people off guard because they didn't expect you to be as reckless or as aggressive. I should say reckless, aggressive. And so logic will tell you at times to be something, but then your heart might tell you something different. Mm. And what your heart to me is, if it's a people job like coaching football was, and you're in a people job, your heart is not just your heart. Your heart is based on who is surrounding you. Mm. You know, I give people the story about our rivalry game, the only overtime ever in history, that Ohio State versus the Wolverines. And it's double overtime. And we're down by 3 points. And we're, you know, we're in position to kick a field goal and tie it. And it's 4th and 1. And logic tells you kick the field goal, go again. And my heart and my players in that stadium, I said, I'm going for it right here. And we went for it on 4th down and barely made it. And we would have lost the game if we don't get it. But next play we scored. So I obviously would never tell that story if we didn't get the first down.
Wow. That's insane.
You know what logic is also in the world I was in? It's probably the world you're in too. It's analytics. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of data that never was available to me when I was younger. Mm-hmm. And okay, it says 80% chance of winning the game if you do this. Mm-hmm. So I always had access to that. But then I would often overrule it with what?
Your heart.
Heart.
Wow. I feel like that's another great conversation to save for later. Let's close out with the last, right? Victim is, and I heard one time you speak to players of or parents of players once. And I thought that was so cool because it was almost like you were like coaching the parents too. But because of what of everything you had to deal with, like parents were always a part of it, you know, and you coached them into basically like, well, what I wrote down is the fifth thing. A victim is part of the problem and a victor is part of the solution. And so I remember you talking to the parents, and I'm sure this is like just the way you coach most people is like, be a part of the solution. Don't be a part of the problem.
Yeah, unfortunately, that you see in the world I was in, parents are often part of the problem. Mm-hmm. Mike Thomas is one of the greatest stories of all time. Mike Thomas's father and his uncle were the solution, not part of it. They were the solution. Mm-hmm. Mike was not – Mike Thomas is the highest paid receiver in National Football League now. He was really struggling at Ohio State. Mm-hmm. And Keyshawn Johnson, a former All-Pro in the NFL, mm-hmm. Super Bowl champion, and a guy that I knew, a friend of mine, is his uncle. And mm-hmm. his father, I didn't really know his father very well. And they asked for a meeting with me. And sometimes those meetings don't go well. Mm-hmm. And we walked in, and he said, Coach, what's the problem? Very direct. What's the problem here? And I said, well, Mike's lazy. Mm-hmm. Mike makes excuses. He doesn't work real hard. And he blames other people. He doesn't take ownership of his performance. And he goes, is that right? I didn't know where this was going to go. It could have went one of two ways. It was so direct, it couldn't have went medium.
Right.
And he stood up and he dove right into Mike. Mm-hmm. And he said, Coach, I promise you, you'll see a change in me. Thanks for your time. Shook my hand real hard. I heard him go in the hallway and he went after Mike. Keyshawn went after Mike and his father went after Mike. Mm-hmm. They addressed it. They were transparent. They forced Mike to own it. Within a week, I saw a transition of Mike Thomas. Mm-hmm. I saw him change. Why? Because he owned it.
Right.
And he received the proper counsel instead mm-hmm. of saying, don't be the problem. Mm-hmm. I've had other parents say, you know what, Coach, I think you're wrong. Never mind that I spend 20 hours a day on this mm-hmm. and that I've done it for 35 years, but I think you're wrong. We're going to leave. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, those players a lot of times don't, because now it's, they've been given the get out of jail free card mm-hmm. without, they're part of the problem, not solution.
Yeah. I feel like the way I was raised too, I mean, just being like a young kid and growing up into high school, I would have things to say about like a coach that I didn't agree with, or I wasn't playing enough or something like that. And I would go to mom and want to complain and she'd be like, are you kidding me? I don't want to hear it.
Yeah. And that's not saying coaches are always right.
Right.
but they're the coach.
Yeah.
The parents aren't always right. Does that mean you can have open dialogue? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Coaches want to hear respectfully, mm-hmm. and the coaches will be respectful of the player too. But the worst thing you could do is go behind, you know, that's when you see a cancer within a locker room, mm-hmm. a group of players that, you know, are sitting there complaining about a situation. That team has no chance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. Awesome. Dad, thank you so much. I feel like we have a lot of cool conversations coming up in the near future. I mean, we're pretty much roommates right now. We're going to be neighbors here pretty soon. But thank you so much for coming on. Love you. And we have our date in about an hour, so we got to go get ready.
Love you. G-Fit, baby.
Thank you all so much for listening to the Live Limitless podcast. If you enjoyed this episode today, do us a favor and share with someone you think will benefit from it. And if you just want to show general support, you can do that by leaving us a 5-star rating if you believe it deserves it. Or you can leave us a review or any type of feedback in Apple Podcasts. We want to hear from you. Also, make sure to check out the show notes for more information or to just see how you can keep up with me on social media. Thanks again, everybody, for listening. Go crush the week and live limitless.